you know, and you know what Mel Brooks says? I told you last time.
Yes.
Funny is money, and wit is shit.
Hmm.
And that's how you get Dracula dead and loving.
I've not seen that one.
That's.
I haven't seen. I stopped at Spaceballs.
Yeah.
That's where I stopped.
Yeah, that's fair.
I thought I don't need to see anymore.
That's fair. There's a lot of people who love Spaceballs. Love it.
Most people who love Spaceballs saw it before they saw Star Wars.
Possibly. Yep. And that's before all the Star Wars parodies came out. We should talk about some of this stuff on the air.
Nah.
Okay, then.
Hi there, everyone. My name is David Dedrick, and this is Sneaky Dragon. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon, everyone. Sneaky Dragon, here again, episode 165.
Sure.
Still alive.
Normally, I have a chance to introduce myself before.
Who are you, sir? What are you doing on my show?
What are we doing, the Fred Allen show? Sure. What are you doing, down Allen's Alley? Holy cow.
What are you doing here?
Hi.
I'm just walking down this alleyway.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ian Boothby. I'm the co-host.
Wait, you can't. This is an Ellen's Alley. You don't have an accent. I don't believe it.
Oh, okay. I hope this character doesn't get ripped off by the Warner Brothers and I don't get a dime, boy. I hope I don't see a single dime for having my character taken. The laws of copyright law is a joke, boy.
It's weird, isn't it, we've talked that the actor got to do a movie as that character, though. But the character was created by Fred Allen. He wrote all the scripts for the show.
We're talking right now about Senator Claghorn.
Yes.
From the Fred Allen show. One of Allen's Alley, is that what they would call
it? At the beginning of the show, he would go for a walk down Allen's Alley.
And so then you would, and then on, of course, the Warner Brothers did Foghorn Leghorn, which was exactly the same character. Now what Warner Brothers would do, though, they would have like one-offs where, they did do a Jack Benny one, which was actually played by Jack Benny as a mouse.
Yeah.
But they would do characters based on famous comedians, and they just lift the act and put them in the body of an animal, and you do a one-off, but this one just caught fire,
apparently.
It
seemed weird, because they did an Abbott and Costello one.
Absolutely.
Where they just a complete lift of their act.
Complete lift.
And and taking a character from a show like that, it seems really strange to me. You know, that you would just lift the entire character. Because the bit in the show, Allen's Alley, it's basically dialect humor.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of sort of vaudeville dialect humor, which was really easy to do, but it was kind of political humor. With characters,
right.
Ethnic characters speaking the truth. Which was easier to do then than to have a white person say controversial things. It was easier to have an Italian mum say it.
The other flip side to that would be, most people know Andy Griffith from his TV show, but he did some albums and whatever, and his comedy thing was kind of the hick who would speak the truth, but almost unknowingly, I don't know much about this, but I'll tell you this, and he'd speak it. So we could take it from someone who was from outside of the country who might not know, but hey, you know.
They don't know.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of, you know, back in the day, the fool could speak to the king. Because it's a fool. How you get mad at the fool? And the fool could, because back then, you know, he thought of people with other ethnicities as fools. They're dumber than me because they speak silly, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Or the hick, same difference.
Yeah.
So they can give you the truth. And it's funny because they talk strange.
That's right. And it's palatable.
Mm-hmm.
But
you know, with the Abbott and Costello thing, though, I think... You know, that even though it's a direct lift, it's good at, you know, again, we're getting almost into our past topics, but it's good advertising for Abbott and Costello because you're so popular, someone's doing a parody of you.
Yeah.
So, you know, that only serves Abbott and Costello, you know, when they want to get a TV show later. Mm-hmm. Does anyone know Abbott and Costello? Of course they do. They know us so well, they made this cartoon about us.
Well, I guess, but
in Senator Claghorn's case, everyone knows Foghorn more than they know. They know the parody than they know the thing.
I would say, and now people would have no idea who Senator Claghorn was. I feel I was kind of lucky, like, when I was a kid, and I guess when you had the same thing.
By the way, everyone, take a drink.
Yeah, take a drink, everybody. We're talking childhood.
We weren't talking about our childhoods with the Fred Allen thing. That was before we were even born.
Even born. But when I was a kid, there was a local DJ. His name was Jack Cullen.
Okay.
And he did a show every night on what would have been like the most popular radio station here in the Lower Mainland at the time, which was an AM station, CKNW. And he did a show called The Owl Prowl. Mm-hmm. And he would play music from my parents' childhood, I guess, because it was mostly like swing music and, and music like that. But in the show, he would did a segment called Network Replay, and it came on, I think, at 10 o'clock. And he would usually play one or two radio shows, and he had a vast collection of records and he had, so he had a lot of these old radio shows as well. And he would play, like, so that's where I heard the Jack Benny show and the Fred Allen show. And so it really has, I'm kind of nostalgic for it. I still love those shows. I actually love to listen to them while I'm drawing. And I love them. It's partly nostalgic because we would go to my grandma's for dinner on a Sunday and stay there till late, and then we'd be driving home, and in the car we could listen to Network Replay.
Yeah, I remember everyone was in quiet. The car too. Yeah, that's everyone's right. Quiets down
because you're tired,
and the family stops fighting because we're all listening to this.
Because you're tired, and it's just the Fred Allen Show or Suspense or this, whatever. There's a mix of things. A Shadow,
Johnny Dollar,
Johnny Dollar, which I actually didn't remember Johnny Dollar till I was much older. So he must have played it, but I don't remember it. But yeah, so all those shows have a real resonance for me. So, and I'm actually, I really admire Fred Allen. Like, he was pretty amazing, actually, because, I mean, he, unlike Jack Benny, who had a writing staff, Fred Allen wrote everything on his own. He wrote his own show. So every show was his, you know.
Like, why do you think he did that? Because he was popular enough that he would have had access to the writers. Why would he have said no to that?
I think.
Control freak?
No.
Cheap?
Not a control freak, not cheap. Prideful, someone who was a hard worker and was very proud of the fact that he put in a day's work every day.
Okay.
And because he grew up in Boston, he grew up in a very poor family, and he almost kind of fell into he started in vaudeville, and he almost kind of fell into it because in those days they had talent shows, and you could go into a talent show and there'd be maybe five of you, and you would go to a place, you go to a bar or you go to a whatever, a men's club or something, and you'd put on this talent show.
Right.
And basically, it was an act. Everyone was already knew each other. They did the same talent show every week, but they would just go to different places and do it. So there'd be a singer, a juggler, a magician, whatever. And so he did kind of a comedy spot. And what was interesting about him is that he was almost ahead of his time as like a deconstruction, as doing deconstruction acts. Like, he would do a ventriloquist act with a dummy that was falling apart. And so he'd be trying to do his act, but as he was doing it, the dummy was, bits and pieces were falling off of it. Or he did a magic act where he couldn't actually do the magic, and it was a parody of a magic act.
That does seem ahead of its time.
It does seem ahead of its time, right? Yeah. And so that's...
And there's nothing better than being ahead of your time. Because that's where your money is, in the future.
In the future.
Sometimes after you're dead, that's where your money is.
Yeah, so he kind of came up that... That's how he came.
See,
that's
also how Ernie Kovacs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, totally. Someone who's totally ahead of their time. Absolutely. And Ellen, and it was just a way to earn money. Like, that's why he did it, to support his family. Like, he had a job working at a grocer's, and he was a bag boy, and he would do deliveries. But then in the evenings, he'd leave his job, and he'd go down and do this and make a little bit more money for his family.
And it wouldn't be, I understand, like, you know, my son's never going into show business, but like, it would be just another job, I would think, like, back then, because there wouldn't be that incredible fame. Like, if it was just vaudeville days, right, you're talking about?
Well, vaudeville had its
famous people, but not to the level.
Well, no one was ever at that level.
Right. It was when radio kicked in that then all of a sudden, and film, you know, that you really got the stars.
Vaudeville and film were pretty much parallel to each other.
Were they?
You know, yeah.
Vaudeville and film?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, film drew from vaudeville in terms of taking talent from it. Like, but I think that when film started in, I think after, when sound came in, I think that would have spelled the end of vaudeville, you know, because then it had nothing to offer that film couldn't offer. Like, before that time, you know, you could say, well, if you want to hear people talking and singing, and you have to go to vaudeville. And that, you know, that's a good deal, because especially if you lived in a small town, because you'd have a traveling troupe that would come in, and you get a singer and a comedian and a dancer, and you get all these different acts in one show and one package. And so that, you know, that, but once sound came into films, and then you had musicals and with, you know, comedians in them, and et cetera, that really ate into vaudeville. And that was sort of the end of it. But yeah, like someone like Harry Houdini, I mean, he started in medicine shows, which was like an early version of vaudeville.
Right.
And then, you know, then he worked vaudeville, and then he built up a big enough name, and he was super famous even before film. But he did do a movie. Harry Houdini did a film.
They
just restored it. I can't remember what it's called now. I was just reading about TCM. They have a film festival coming, and they've just have a new restored film, and it's coming. It's something like Grim something, and I can't remember the rest of the title. I'm sorry. If you want, I can search my phone for the. So if you want to wow. spend some time for a second right. here,
here in Vancouver, well, not in Vancouver, but in New Westminster, which is a suburb of Vancouver, we did have a vaudeville scene back in the day, mm-hmm. and some of those spaces that were theaters still exist. I'd really like to see a documentary or something about that period of time. The first girl I ever went out with seriously was, and I mean seriously, I went out with this girl. Anyway, Dave's busy.
Yeah.
So you got the name?
Yes, I do.
All right, hit me with the name, and then I'll tell you the story of my girlfriend.
It's called The Grim Game. It came out in 1919.
Yeah.
And it was just discovered, like just recently brought to TCM for restoration.
And so are they touring with this?
They're doing a film festival. So I don't know if they're touring with this festival. Or what? I didn't read the whole
okay,
thing.
Okay, we'll look that up. And
still
we'll
pretty amazing, though.
We'll put something on the site about that.
They're also going to have there's quite a few films as part of it too. Wow, but I don't know where. But yeah, that sounds. I mean, it's going to come out on DVD
right.
once after they tour it and stuff like that. They'll release it. So that's pretty amazing.
Well,
yeah.
What I was saying about what my first girlfriend was. She was a magician's assistant to Mandrake, who did do the vaudeville scene.
Okay.
and toured around and was. You know, the basis for the cartoon character, the comic strip character
okay.
as well.
Wow.
You know, and so that world always kind of fascinated me, the vaudeville world, you know.
Yeah.
And since that time, of course, they've all passed away for the
mm-hmm.
most part.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just really neat thinking like, oh, that was a thing.
Yeah. It's amazing. Well, I mean, one thing I like about is when you think of the Marx Brothers doing Night of the Opera, which was kind of their comeback film after Duck Soup, which is their best film, but was a real flop.
Oh, why was it a flop?
I think because it was too wacky. Like, it had no grounding at all.
Okay.
I mean, it's a combination of things. One, the height of the Depression.
Right.
Two, it's their fourth film.
We
know you guys. And I think it was just, it was about war. It was about politics. You know, so it had a lot of humor that I think people didn't want to see. Even
right.
But if they saw it, they would realize.
Quick question.
Come on.
Is the title a play on Fuck You?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because it seems like someone like hits their thumb or does something and yells "Duck Soup." It sounds like something you'd get a kid to yell because you can't say the actual swears.
I don't think it.
Are you sure it's not?
I don't think
it really
is.
Seems
it an
like,
epithet, Duck Soup? I thought it was a description of something.
Oh, I'm sure it's a description of something, but it also sounds like something you would say.
It's just,
if you couldn't yeah. say what you wanted to say, you know, and you say those words instead.
It's a carry on of animal theme names because it started Animal Crackers,
yeah.
Monkey Business, Horse Feathers. Duck Soup.
And then Coconuts.
Coconuts was their first film.
Did they think that coconuts were an animal back
no,
then?
No, I think they just went from Animal Crackers on.
Oh, okay.
They thought, once we have done Animal Crackers, the next movie is Monkey Business. Let's
well,
carry
animal
this on.
Animal Crackers are a type of food,
Let's
and
keep
then you're going,
on.
Into coconuts.
Let's keep going
What
on.
Was their most successful movie?
Probably A Night of the Opera, I would say.
All right.
Because it was an MGM film, so it had the muscle of MGM behind it, whereas the first four films were Paramount, I believe. But when they did Night of the Opera, they took the main sketches, like the stateroom sketch and some other ones that I can't think of. And they took them on the road and performed them live. And
now, how would you do the stateroom sketch live?
Well,
that's an enormous.
You just have a stage. You just have a. It's just a. It's a very small set. It's a one room sketch.
Yeah, I understand. But the sheer amount of people that you would need
yeah.
for that and then to do the tumble out.
I don't think they did that part of it. I think they would have just had a blackout.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but yeah, they just toured with the cast and they went from town to town. And they would, you know, figure out what got the most laughs. And apparently that scene, though, it's what's interesting with that scene. There's this kind of famous, and I wish I could think of his name, and I probably told this story before, but I can tell it again. There's this famous, his name was Al Boesberg. He was a writer. He was a super lazy guy. He wrote in his bath.
How lazy was he?
He wrote in his bath. That's how lazy he was.
Okay, I think you have mentioned him, but go ahead.
So they needed the film was all finished, but they felt like they needed one kind of scene. They're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave this script to this Al Boesberg to punch.
They went to his bathroom.
To punch up.
They knocked on the door. He's in the tub. They hand him the script.
Actually.
Or the blank pieces of paper.
They go to his place. He's gone. They can't find him anywhere.
Mm.
But attached to the ceiling with the letter opener is the script. And all that he's done, all he added was the stateroom sketch. That's all that he just wrote that scene. And that's all that he contributed.
Wow.
But it's the high point of the film, and it really is like a key scene.
Yeah.
But they took those scenes on the road, and then they just got the timing down. They added jokes, took away jokes, you know, and got everything all really polished. Because what Groucho felt was that you'll have to kind of stand near potted plants to be close to a microphone. And so, but he felt those were the best, you know, ones that they did because they'd done them on stage and they did them for like a year on stage and they would just throw out jokes that didn't work anymore and bring in new stuff and slowly polish it. And there's a joke that George S. Coffin was standing backstage one time talking to someone at one of their shows and he stopped and said, Oh, excuse me. I thought I heard one of my jokes. Because it had changed so much that all his lines were gone from the original.
Well, one of the things, I forget the film that he does it in. Maybe he does it more than once. But he's telling a series of jokes. They're good. And he tells a joke, and he turns to the audience and goes, they can't all be gems. Yes. And then just goes back. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, he knows that one doesn't work. And you can only do that if you've done that live on stage.
Yeah, yeah. Or this felt that way. I think he was kind of, I kind of think of him as like a John Lennon. Mm-hmm. And that he could get bored really easily. And so he would be bored of the jokes before anyone else was. Like, there's a lot of great jokes that never made it to the screen because by the time he got through the rehearsal in front of the camera, he didn't like the joke anymore.
Oh, it's deadly to do that. Yeah. I mean, I'm putting together a show right now. I'll plug it. The James Bond live show we're doing on February 5th at the Rio Theater, and I've got some jokes for it.
Yeah.
And I'm reluctant to actually give them to the cast now because even though it's just a week from now.
Yeah.
I want them to be fresh to them, and I think they'll be used to them by next week, you know, and so they'll have run them through their heads so many times that you'll have, you know, it's a Slurpee, you've taken all the flavor out, now it's just a cup of ice, but it's like, no, to the next person, that's still got the full flavor, because they're new to it.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
It's really dangerous. You know, I know a lot of stand-ups like that, too, that'll ditch hilarious things out of their act, because I'm just bored with it, mm-hmm. and you can't fake it, and so you got to, and so off it goes.
Yeah. No, I think, well, we know with this show that we've, you know, run it into the ground. And we just keep on going. Like,
well, yeah.
We've reanimated the corpse.
When our most popular segment was Deck Talk, and we're a comedy show,
that's a thing, right?
That's warnings. That's the biggest red flag you've ever seen.
You know, here's the thing, though, is never define yourself as a comedy show.
Yeah, that's
then
a good point.
Then you're all right.
I'm the same thing, by the way. I'm the same thing now with improv shows. I've taken improv out of every description of any improv show that I've done. Now I'm just saying interactive, or, you know, audience participation or something like that. But mm-hmm. I've pulled that out just because I think the word itself is associated with so many other things that I don't necessarily want to be associated with that pull. And same thing with comedy. Comedy's a tricky one to say.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah.
Yeah.
But you want to attract people to it, so.
Yeah, you want to kind of give the idea that it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's almost like if you see a movie poster and it says the word comedy on it, boo.
Yeah.
You know, just like, no, just give me, show that it's a comedy, but don't tell me it's a comedy, because if you have to tell me it's a comedy, you might as well have a bunch of squares on the bottom with all the actors' faces. Then I know it's a piece of shit. Right?
When it has that giant cast?
Yeah. Or just the faces in boxes at the bottom. Mm-hmm. There's never been a good film that's ever had that before and ever.
What about Mousetrap? I didn't actually watch it.
You say that's a comedy?
I don't know.
It's a mystery, man.
No, wasn't there a movie version?
Well, there was the Mousetrap, yeah.
No, I don't mean that one. But
are you talking Clue?
Maybe I'm, I don't know.
I think you're thinking of Clue.
I have no idea what I'm talking
but
about.
But Dave, Clue had four different endings, so maybe some of them could have been very funny. Yeah, it was a comedy, though. You're correct.
The Mousetrap?
No, The Mousetrap was not a comedy. Oh, okay. Not that I know. No, I've never seen it.
Okay, there was a movie called Mousetrap, but it wasn't an ensemble comedy. I'm mixing it up.
Oh, you're thinking with Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
And there's a mouse.
Evans, the British.
Yeah, Chris Evans, Captain America.
And not Chris Evans, but the other guy. You know, he was like briefly popular for a while. He was in a lot of movies, rubber-faced actor.
He's very British. Funny. You know, when you were mentioning going on the road and really honing, I think, and I was actually thinking of Nathan Lane with that. Because a film that surprised me by not being bad was the Producers musical with Matthew Broderick and him. And when you see them doing it in the film form, they do the pauses and the looks and the what have you. And it's like, oh, you rehearsed this forever because you did on Broadway. Yeah. So you know where the laughs are. And it's exactly the same deal.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this and a lot of what was that about? And it was really nice. They had a nice rhythm and the film was definitely better than it should have been.
Yeah. Did it work? My one problem with pauses for laughter is if no one's laughing. You know what I mean? Like if you're watching a movie in a room with two of you watching it, two people aren't going to laugh that much at a movie.
You're okay with a musical because there's so much, not even just the musical music, but like there's music in the background going da da or ma na that it's filling the noise anyway, so you're fine.
Yeah,
you'll be all right.
Yeah, because I'm sure I've talked about this before, but seeing Buster Keaton live with a big audience with a full theater, both balcony and, you know, the lower section, all full of people laughing, you finally understand why it seemed to have these weird pauses in it. You went, oh, they're for laughter.
Yeah.
They put them in there to time out the laughter. And when you watch it by yourself sitting in a room, they just feel like weird slow bits because you're not laughing your head off because you're just by yourself in a room. And you just can't, you just don't laugh like that when you're by yourself. You just don't have big belly laughs by yourself. This is not, it's not, I mean, maybe you do. It's just, it's not normal though if you do that, by the way, whoever belly laughs by themselves.
It's not?
No, no. You should see someone.
Oh.
It's an illness. It's probably you have the... You have the laughing sickness.
Oh, okay. It's not just having a good sense of humor and enjoying life?
No, no, it's not.
Okay.
It's not, nothing to do with a good sense of humor.
If you eat food by yourself and you find it delicious and you go, that's also a problem?
Yes, that's also a problem.
All right. Fair enough.
That points to deeper issues.
Does it?
Yes.
Well, shows what I know, everybody.
Do you do that?
I don't. You know what? No, I probably don't go, I don't know. I talk to myself a lot.
I do sometimes too. But mostly when I talk to myself, it's because I'm dumb. Like, if I do something dumb, I'll be like, oh, that was dumb. Or something, you know, I don't drive
you don't,
my
car. You don't say, hey, dummy? Or you're,
no, or I don't drive my car and drive it well and then go, I'm a good driver. That would just be weird. But if I have, like, if I almost have a near miss, I'd be like, ooh, that was close. But I would say that aloud.
But if you're driving your car and you see some pretty girl and she can't hear you,
yeah.
Will you ever do the...
No.
To yourself?
That's even weirder.
It's not, well, depends. If you want to narrate your life and have fun, depends if you want to have fun with
life. You don't need that kind of fun.
Do you sing two songs in the car?
Yes, I sing the song. I don't as much as I used to, because one day Lisa was following me home one time, and then they passed me. And when I got home, they said, oh, we could see you singing in the car. And it was the first time I realized people could see me singing.
Yeah, it's fine.
And I just stopped. I stopped after that.
It's delightful.
I'll sing it at a light and I'll put my hand over my mouth. So it looks like I'm yawning.
So you can do the Rudy Valley stuff.
That's right. Vododio.
That's right.
Oh, you kid.
Because that's the kind of songs you sing in the car.
That's right.
Old time.
I go back. I go really far back.
No, I sometimes narrate my life. Pia is off in France this week.
Yes.
And so I'm spending, here's the thing. I'm spending time by myself, so I am talking to myself more than I would. You know, sometimes I'll talk to the cats, but the cats have clearly left the room, and sometimes the cats will come back. Did you mean us? No, I'm just talking to myself. Okay, but I'm also writing, so when I write, I also speak out loud to hear certain lines, so I'm justifying it that way. But I just talk to myself. I don't mind. You know,
no, that's fine. But you don't like compliment yourself. You don't go, Boothby, you dog, you've done it again. No one says stuff
like that. I'm not Mr. Magoo. No.
But, you know, you don't say stuff like that to yourself.
Good for Mr. Magoo, by the way. That guy had a real high self-image.
He doesn't.
Oh, you've done it again. Oh, Magoo. Oh, you're a girl. Oh, give me a kiss. Who deserves it? I'll touch you there, Magoo. I'll touch. Let's have some fun with myself. Oh. Uncle, we can all see you. No one else is in the room.
That sounds a little
too much.
I can't
see anybody.
That sounds like a little too much like Jim Backus' actual live act. Doing Mr. Magoo at Ice Capades when I was a kid.
What?
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody. Guys, I don't care if the rest of you listen to the rest of this podcast at all. Uh-huh. If you want to turn it off, that's your business. I've just heard that Jim Backus just did Ice Capades live.
Yeah.
This is the most interested I've ever been in this podcast since we've started. Okay.
Yes.
Set the stage. What year is it?
Okay. This is early 70s.
All right. He's still Backus-y. He's still doing Gilligan's Island at that point.
I think he would have been past Gilligan's Island by this point, but he was known for
But before Gilligan's Planet.
Yeah. He came more as Mr. Magoo. He was the voice of Mr. Magoo. That's how we knew who... I mean, I knew him from Gilligan's Island, but...
Of course you did.
But he was kind of... And so
And you knew him, of course, from Rebel Without a Cause. Was he in that? Isn't he the dad in Rebel Without a Cause?
I did not know him as Rebel. I was like three or four.
James Dean, why don't you get a cause? That's not... I'm not doing Backus.
Yeah.
I'm doing someone else.
WC Fields.
I'm doing Edward Robinson. Listen, I'm blind. That's a whole gag, see?
I got another. It's a whole gag, see? I can't see a thing. Yeah.
I really should wear glasses, but I'm too vain. My boy. Gilligan, I have money on an island. That doesn't seem to have any effect. Why would that have any effect, boy? Oh, we're all going to die. Anyway, please continue.
Get out of here, fly. You bother me. No, he...
He slips on the ice.
He missed. No, he did
breaks
it,
a hip.
I think someone that like Karen Magnuson or one of the Canada's darlings was figure skating at this as
nice.
Well. So you know it had like its assortment of figure skaters.
Yeah.
At which you know for a kid, a young boy, grade 3 or 4, whatever age that is, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know what more could you ask for in your life but to go to a Pacific Coliseum
mm-hmm.
where you would. Usually go to see hockey games.
Right.
Sitting in the very highest seats in the blue section.
Right.
Where parents can afford to buy tickets for their kids.
Okay.
Where you'd be really, really interested in the prize in your Cracker Jack box because the Canucks were in a very good team.
Right. Also, they had prizes in Cracker Jack back then.
They did. And then usually a flat toy that you'd kind of snap together and it would just make a swing. Be like, wow, it's a swing.
Slide, something. Why not?
So then, they had to forget. But in the part of the show was for him to come out and he did like a monologue. And it was so blue that I can't even describe it.
Dave, you were in the blue seats. Maybe the people who weren't in the blue seats.
We were in the reds for this. We were in the reds.
You just said you were in the blue seats.
No, for hockey games, I said I was for.
Oh, okay.
But at this thing, we're sitting quite close.
All right. So what would be a Magoo joke?
I can't remember. Come on. This is a long time ago. I don't even remember what happened to me last week. But he came out. And he did
would
the
you
Mr.
like
Magoo,
to feel my white cane?
He did a Mr. Magoo voice, and he did this kind of story.
Yeah.
But a lot of the jokes were a little off color. Not like totally, like he didn't drop an F-bomb or anything. But you know, he, you know what I mean? But it was just kind of these sort of stories.
Mr. Magoo dropping an F-bomb would be fantastic.
Live.
It would be funny if like, here's how I would have played that. If this was a Mr. Magoo thing, it's like, okay, Magoo, we booked you in 2 gigs. What do you got? First one, there's a stag at the Friars Club. It's got to be as blue can be. These guys want the dirtiest show you could possibly do. I'll do that then. All right. Also, we booked you for Ice Capades. It's got to be squeaky clean. Maybe jokes about Disney characters, you know, but just keep it all above board. Yeah, got it. All right. I'm writing down the times for both of the shows here.
Yeah.
Well, get to them. All right. And off we go.
Yeah.
And then, Magoo made a mix up, did all the Disney jokes at the Friars Club.
To absolute silence.
And now here comes.
Here he comes with his little double entendres.
Yeah.
Single entendres for kids to sit there listening to.
Yeah, the film.
What is Mr. Magoo saying?
Would you like to see my Magoo?
But, you know, my dad and my uncles were there. So when they left, they're all like, well, my boy.
Oh, is that where it got started?
That's where it got started, exactly. The Dedrick family tradition has begun.
Nice. Oh, man. Seeing Jim Backus, that's pretty cool.
It was cool. I mean, the thing is that for me, I shouldn't say that I was shocked or anything like that because I was a little kid. I didn't understand what he was talking about.
No, but you got the reaction.
My mom was the one who was mad.
Exactly. You see the reaction of the parents of the,
What did he say?
I know. It's like
a vagina.
It's like when I'm with my niece and nephew and something comes on the TV that's a little meh, and I get the immediate look to me as like, what's your reaction? And you've got to be not reacting at all. And then they're like, hey, we want to show you this turn down the what video. Okay, let's watch this. All right, I've got to stone face my way through this. And then we can have a discussion.
Why, what is it?
Why, what is it?
Yeah.
It's a very sexual video, a lot of dancing.
Oh, okay.
It's funny, though. It's a funny video.
Okay.
And there's like one thing where like the music's just playing and this woman with very large breasts, an older woman, the boobs start going in different directions and they go crazy. And it's the kind of thing if you're a kid. You would love it. It's
is
people
it animated?
Like jumping on the floor and then smashing through a ceiling and landing on someone's table. It's you know, if you're a kid, it's hilarious.
Broad comedy.
But you know that there's some issues to discuss afterwards, mm-hmm. perhaps, if you want, about stereotypical depictions of women in culture, if you want to bring that up.
Women's boobs don't do that.
That's right. And, you know, this is comedy, but let's make sure that balance this and that. But yeah, you got to be like Johnny Stoneface through the thing and just like, all right. Because they're looking for you to be shocked.
Well, just go on YouTube, find a Russ Meyer film, and then show them what women's boobs really do when they're full of, full of
when
saline.
When you're paying for them.
When they're full of saline.
Yeah.
This is what they do when you're paying for them. It was...
Can they breastfeed? No, but they can fill up like a contact lens case.
The same thing happened when I was a kid. I loved Gordon Lightfoot, the singer Gordon Lightfoot.
Yes.
Famous for Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which he hadn't written when I saw him. I saw him as a young lad.
So what song did you like? Like Sundown?
I loved the album Don Quixote. I love the song Don Quixote and Alberta Bound and that kind of.
Yep.
But yeah, Sundown, that era of Gordon Lightfoot. So
I also enjoy Gordon Lightfoot.
I'm still a big fan, but I was a big fan when I was a kid. So my mom took me to see him at the Queen Elizabeth Theater here in Vancouver. And nice, it was fun.
Nice theater to see.
It was a nice theater. We sat up in the, we were in the, one of the sort of box seats along this, the edge. Right. And that was nice.
It first concert I ever went to was there with you.
Laurie Anderson. That's right. That's a good show. And, so he left. My mom was mad because he said some blue jokes.
Oh, no.
And I was, you know, once again, I was a kid. If he said anything, like, I did not get it.
Right.
And they were, I'm sure they were very mild if he said anything.
But
at
if
all.
You could read his mind, Dave. Oh, the tales the thoughts would tell.
I could tell. I don't know. I don't know what she was upset about. Because really, there's probably one kid in the audience, and it was me. Mm-hmm. And if she had asked me what he had said, or what he meant by what he said, I wouldn't be able to tell her.
It's also, it's Gordon Lightfoot, so fucking get over it.
Yeah.
You know, Gordon Lightfoot, it's
Gordon.
Fine.
It's Gordon,
not,
man.
It's not Raffy.
It's Gordon's gold.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. You went to, you took your kid to see an adult show, and he said...
This is what you're going to get.
He said things to adults. Yeah, I know, that's what I'm... But
and just, also, what's the fear? Like, I understand if, you know, if that thing was going on at school every day, and your teacher was coming out, hey, what up, motherfuckers? Like, I could see how the parent would be like, let's just take it down a notch. But if you go out to a concert and, like, what's the worst case scenario? Now you're going to be telling a few Gordon Lightfoot blue jokes around the schoolyard.
Am I going to even remember them?
You don't get them.
You know me.
But even so, like, what's the big whoop to dooba dooba doo?
I know.
You know, but I know that I know there's a lot of parents and, you know, upset. And again, I'm not a parent.
Neither.
What? Since when?
Are
the kids okay?
Well, let's not go into that right now.
All right, fair enough. But you know,
that's to say disinheritance.
When your kids were watching TV and a blue joke would come on, would you immediately grab the remote and be like, "That's enough of that!" Clickety clack, off it goes. Here's your copy of Chaucer. Each children back to bed.
Chaucer? That's even worse.
Yeah, that's right. Chaucer is pretty dirty.
It's pretty dirty.
Okay.
There's nothing you can...
I'm trying to think of a book that's not dirty from back in the day.
You'd have to find one that was Bowdlerized by Mr. Bowdler.
Hmm. I don't know. But would you like be concerned about that kind of thing, like the blue material?
Come on.
No, well, I'm asking you know the people. I know you, but the people out here, we have listeners.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Would I be concerned? No.
Okay, because I know some parents that immediately would be, oh, that's enough, a click. And I don't quite get the reason for that. Now what you've done is you've really made this thing into an issue.
Yeah.
You've really made this is the forbidden fruit. Don't ever watch, and you know, for me, with my mom, it was, I couldn't watch Python because of the nudity. Because there was a...
Terrible.
Which was all like old art.
Yes.
Repurposed old art. Though I think there was an episode or two where there was a topless
there was
lady.
There was some boobs.
Yeah. But
some
like
boobage.
As a kid, you're like, oh, that's neat.
But nothing like Benny Hill.
But who cares? And even Benny Hill, you know, Benny Hill is just elder abuse, smacking that old man around. But like, so, you know, the only thing I can see of Benny Hill is like, you might want to have a discussion now with your kid about how, you know, the objectification, maybe you could have a discussion about how, you know, nowadays the women should have like more parts. Speaking roles and not just be there as, you know, objects in the background. That's a thing. But that wasn't the reason back then. It was just like, this is dirty. That's bad for kids. Click off.
I thought you were going to say, don't race trains.
I need to know what that means.
Oh, that's how Benny Hill died. He died racing a train.
Okay.
He crossed the track and was hit by the train.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
It wasn't me. Nor did I recommend that he do that. So I don't feel any kind of guilt for that.
Right.
For it to
and you're
fine.
Saying that little train that could went up the hill.
Yes, that's right.
It thought it could.
It did. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Rest in peace, Benny Hill. We all enjoyed Benny Hill for whatever those years that a child enjoys Benny Hill.
I never liked Benny Hill because I knew Monty Python before Benny Hill.
Okay.
And I knew SCTV before Benny Hill. So to me, that show was so low class compared to those shows.
And
it didn't summarize Proust. It didn't do that.
Yep.
Which... Actually, neither does Monty Python. It just says it just talks about it, but never actually.
That's the trick.
It's a very good trick, isn't it? Yeah. Sound intellectual. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a trick I do quite a bit, which is you know, make one good reference, then do the rest of your normal nonsense, and people go,
he's well educated.
Well, not only that, they'll feel better about themselves for having watched it. Like, this reflects well on me.
I felt that way too,
for enjoying this show.
You're right.
I get that reference. Ahem. Yeah, now you feel better.
I did not
yourself.
Get the summarized Proust reference at all. To me, like, quite a while before I've actually never read Swan's Way or A Memory of Things Past.
Oh, okay,
name of the entire series.
Yeah, I'm trying right now. Again, I'm sorry to be a double plug for the James Bond show.
But double plug for the James Bond show. But there's this one on February 5th.
That's right.
At 8 o'clock at the Rio Theater.
I'm throwing in references to old James Bond things. Some from the recent past. Some from sort of my youth, and yeah. Some from way in the past.
Okay.
And I know a lot of these are not going to be caught, and a lot of these are going to be chucked. Like there's one thing that I was going to do off the top, and I just went, nah, that's not going to play. Which was James Bond has a scar in the books.
Okay.
So he should have a scar. And I went, do I want to have a scar through the whole thing? Like, what's the joke on that? Like, yeah, besides the fact that we're going to mention, you know, the one thing I thought was, well, this shows it's the literary character, not the movie character. And since the literary character is the only one that's public domain, as long as he's got a scar, we can have him do whatever he wants. But the scar falls off. We can't do anything with him because that's the movie guy.
Yeah.
But he's got a scar. That's literary guy. So we're going to be fine.
Okay.
And then I got nothing with that. And now what I'm trying to do right now is write the GoldenEye Nintendo 64 video game into it in some way.
Okay.
Whether we can put it up on the screen, or I'm trying to now find a way of doing that game live on stage. But then again, there's such a young audience that will be coming probably to this.
They'll know that game.
They might know that game, but I don't care even if they don't know that game. So, you know, the people who get it will go, we'll see how it goes. But there's a lot of references like that.
Yeah.
There's one that I've kind of given up on, which is the first appearance of James Bond in media aside from books was on CBS, and it was in 1953, and
it was
Climax. The show was called Climax, and they adapted Casino Royale into an hour.
Yeah.
And it had Peter Lorre as the villain, and the James Bond was Jimmy Bond, and it was Jimmy Bond of the CIA. So when you see Jimmy Bond, he's American.
Okay.
And they're talking about Jimmy Bond. He's the best card guy. Da, da, da. And then there's Peter Lorre doing all this Peter Lorre stuff. And it's not great. But it's interesting that that's the case, that James Bond used to be, the first exposure to James Bond America had was as an American.
Yeah.
And like, well, what about that guy? Can we put that into the show? And so, but we'll see how many things we can shove in. Just make it a blah, 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 blah. But it's right now picking and choosing, and, you know, hopefully not just putting something in there just to be clever, you know.
I wonder if Climax, was that show, I was just going to ask if that show was produced by, oh, darn it, now his name's gone out of my head.
If you say it, I might be able to know, because I watched a bit of it last night.
You watched the show last night?
I watched a bit of it, yeah.
And if I can remember the actor's name, because there was three actors that... When TV first started, they kind of pooled the resources and started a production company to make content for television, because they realized, this is a market that we can... One was David Niven, one was Ida Lupino, and one was Dick Powell.
Okay,
Did he produce Climax?
We will look and we will see.
Okay.
It was one of these shows, you know, like all these shows, that has... It's interesting, because the first image you see is a gun barrel.
Yeah.
They actually, like, the credits are like you're going through a gun barrel and the names are coming up. And I'm like, oh, that's neat.
That's a neat
one. All right, we're in. And then the next thing is like a guy introducing it, because you got to have that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, Baccarat. The game that, you know, he's just talking about.
Does he explain the rules?
No, he does not explain the rules. By the way, we've got, all right, that's one thing that I am kind of proud of in this show. I was thinking like, well, you had Baccarat, and that was like the European kind. And then as we've progressed, we've now had him doing poker in the movies.
Blah.
Yeah, blah. And I'm like, what's the Canadian equivalent? What's the Canadian card game? And it took me a while. And then I went, exactly, that's what it is. And so now we've got, let's just say there's a Canadian card game he's going to be playing.
Can I guess it, or you don't want to give it away?
Go for it.
Because I was going to say crib.
Incorrect.
Oh.
I doubt you would guess it if I gave you 20 guesses, but when you see it, you'll go like, of course, that's the Canadian card game.
Okay.
So, So I'm kind of happy with that. If nothing else, I'm happy with that. If nothing else, I'm happy with the opening scene. If nothing else, I've got two songs in it I think I'm happy with, one of which I may have to sing that I'm not particularly happy with, because I've got a sore throat right now, and I don't know. But we'll see.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. I've got a weird cold right now where... I'm sick for 3 hours a night, like really sick, coughing for 3 hours a night. But then in the morning, I'm fine.
What a lazy cold.
Well, it's the kind of cold that would piss me off as a child, because I would not be able to stay home from school.
Those are the worst ones.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I feel miserable. I can't do anything today. And in the morning, cock-a-doodle, hey, how we do? Oh, come on. Now I'm just sleepy.
I was too honest as a child to fake sickness. So if I wasn't sick, I just went to school.
Oh, I did an elaborate thing once, and...
How'd it work out for you?
It was not. It didn't work out great. But I realized that. Now I'm sorry to be a little gross here. I'm going to try to get over the gross bits soon. Basically, if you threw up, you could stay home.
Sure.
Like, I didn't want to make myself throw up or whatever.
So you got some Epicac?
No. What I did was I went to the store and I bought some Alpo dog food, because the Alpo dog food looks like stew, and so it looked right. So I took some of that and I put that and pretended that. But clearly my mom knew what we ate the day before, and it wasn't any of that stuff.
Yeah.
That only would work as if we'd had stew the night before, and that did not fly.
And it didn't smell like dog food.
Well, it's in the toilet, so you would not smell it. Anyway, that was my attempt to do that. And I also did the old let's do the temperature thing, put it on the light bulb. Well, your temperature is 130, and clearly
you must have smallpox. It's a miracle your skin isn't boiling off.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you're going to die any second. Yeah, I did not like going to school, so I would do that kind of thing. But yeah, it's been pissing me off that, like, middle of the night, I'll have a big coughing jag. I'll feel like miserable. And then I'm like, oh, well, this is, and then, yeah, by the morning, it's all fixed itself, Wolverine, you know, but, or Prometheus. Let's go with that one. The eagles come at night, pick the liver out, and then by the day, I'm all fine.
You're fine again. So Pia's away. So you're watching a lot of gangster movies.
Well, the way I put it is Pia's away. I'm not depressed.
Yeah.
But I'm doing all the things a depressed guy does.
Oh, really?
I'm keeping depressed guy hours. I'm watching depressed guy TV.
Okay, what's depressed guy TV?
Law and Order SVU. I don't like that show, but it's on, and apparently I'm watching it. I don't like it. Why am I watching this show? That's no damn reason.
Do you have
I'm playing a lot of video games on my phone. I'm also working, but I'm doing all this dumb stuff.
Yeah.
I'm eating Pillsbury Pizza Pops. Who likes those? Why am I having that? That's terrible. What are you doing?
That's true.
It's just stupid. But I'm doing depressed guy stuff, you know?
That's funny. You do that, don't you, when your family goes away?
Dumb.
You're like, I'm going to get
a... I can make a salad still. I've not lost the ability.
But you don't think that.
I did make a salad last night. I went, damn it, I'm going to make a salad. And then it was like, it's too hard to chop the tomatoes. I'm just going to have the lettuce and some dressing. That's enough. Fine. And it's like, what kind of hobo living is that? Why don't you make a big cup of ketchup soup while you're at it then, slick?
Too hard.
Yeah. How about putting on some pants, too? No reason to wear them around the house, I suppose, but why don't you just to be a human being? How's that sound? How about you do that, just in case one of the cats runs out and you have to chase it?
I just have this image of you eating your lettuce and dressing, and then looking up, there's a noose you've hung from the ceiling that you just stare at while you're eating. And...
Oh, where's that come from?
It's a little depressed guy.
Yeah, there you are. Yeah, it's a depressed guy.
You're not going to use it. It's just there just as a, I don't know what it's there for. Just
conversation starter.
It makes you feel better. It's just there to help you along.
Hey, Dave.
What's that?
No noose is good news.
That's what they say.
Yeah, there you are. Anyway, I've talked too much. Back to you.
Well, I just want to say a couple...
Back to Dave with sports.
I want to thank a couple of people. One is Jen, who has written a couple times so that...
Who talked about making me a noose.
Yes, that's right. That's what made me think of it, actually.
Yeah.
Which I quite enjoyed. She writes some exuberant comments on our website, so I appreciate that. And she also said she's going to knit us something.
Okay.
So that's fantastic.
By the way, when she said
by
she
saying
was,
that,
well, let me just say,
you make it going to happen.
When she said she was going to knit me a noose, those of you that are not readers, that sounds creepy, right? It does. Okay. But like she then immediately said, just kidding, just kidding, just kidding. So,
and added lol.
That many and a lol.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's the thing. It's like, now, if the Manson family had written you a note saying, like, we're going to kind of kill you,
that's right.
Just kidding, just kidding, lol, lol, then there you go.
Yeah, then you would have been fine.
By the way, the Manson family, I was thinking about this the other day. Okay. The Manson family are like if the Addams family was in real life.
Why?
Because they're just like the Addams family in real life would be constantly murdering people.
Why?
You look at all the stuff they're doing, like they're dropping like boiling oil off their roof.
Oh, the cartoon characters.
Yeah, they would like murder people, right? It's just pure murder.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff they did, they'd be constantly murdering people. Mm-hmm. Adorable in a cartoon or on a movie, but in real life, they would be actual murderers. So that's what that would be.
In the movie, did they dump oil on people?
It's the first scene in the first film.
Oh, really?
Is people singing Christmas carols. You pan up and you see they're about to have a hot boiling
oil. It's hot chocolate.
Still,
they didn't
boiling
tell you
that. Hot chocolate.
It's fine.
Falling.
Though. It's hot chocolate with marshmallows. It'll cool off on the
marshmallows,
way down.
Marshmallows.
It'll cool off on the way down.
That'll stick to you. But sorry, back to thanks.
Oh, I just wanted to thank her for.
All right,
for
I'm going to cough
offer,
while you thank.
Yeah, her offer to knit us something. This made me happy.
I'm going to say no to the offer that I got.
No, she was lulling.
All right, fair enough.
There's no actual as you said, no news is good news.
I did say that one.
And then another listener, Wayne, wrote to us on our Facebook page, and he said something interesting. Besides not wanting to compliment me, which is fine because that made me really nervous.
Because we talked last week about how you are a compliment addicted to compliments.
I think I'm a compliment hog. I wouldn't say I'm addicted to them, but I really do like them.
I think compliments affect you like sugar affects people with diabetes, in that you need it, but you can't process it properly.
Doesn't everyone like compliments? No. Don't you like getting compliments?
Depends.
Okay. But he brought up something interesting, which he said he was talking about competition as a way to inspire you to create or to work.
Okay.
Now, you're a very competitive person.
What?
I know that because I've played video games with you.
Oh, okay. About things that don't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But in things that do matter, don't think I am.
Because it's funny playing video games with you because I don't know what I'm doing. Like, right. We used to play like Street Fighter or whatever.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just, you know, blindly mashing the keys and somehow beating you over and over again.
Well,
and
then we all remember things differently. All right, go ahead.
Then you would get a look in your eyes, your face would be like, all right. And then you'd get serious. I think before that, you're kind of like, oh, I'm going to take it easy on poor old Dave.
Yeah.
Who doesn't know what he's doing, which is true. But
you got the learning curve.
Which is true.
Well, here's the reason. Because if you start hard with somebody, they're going to go, this isn't fun. I'm going to play.
Yeah, that's true enough.
Put it down. So you got to let them, you know, get the confidence up. And then
you get that steely-eyed, competitive look.
Isn't it more fun, though, to play if you both give a damn? Isn't that fun?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I'm competitive, too.
But in real life,
but I'm a good sport.
Oh, and are you saying I am not a good sport?
I'm saying that you're a terrible sport. I don't know. You're a good sport. I'm just joking. You don't see. It does bother
Dave,
me to lose.
Please
but
give me a lull so I know that you're.
I'm not going to give you a lull. Let's see that noose hanging there. I am competitive in a game or something like that. Mm. But I'm such a good sport that it's ridiculous how good a sport I am.
Right.
Because I really could care less if someone else wins a game I'm playing. I mean, I play to win. But if I lose, that's it. Them's the breaks.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel, and I'm not envious of people. It doesn't really spur me on that way that I want to jump past them or be better than them. You know, I mean, they're doing it is inspiring to me.
Right.
The fact that there's someone doing something that I like and the fact that they're making something that I admire, that's inspiring. But I don't think I'm inspired to beat them or be better than them.
No, I think that's bullshit. Like, not bullshit as in your
line. What, you're saying I'm a liar?
Well,
I guess I don't know myself.
No, I've been thinking about this topic, Dave. Let me get into this. By the way, if you like listening to podcasts, You Made It Weird just did an interview with Henry Rollins. He talks about his motivation for things, and it's usually anger.
I just read an interview with him in Mojo magazine.
Okay. And you've done an interview with him in the past.
I didn't really do an interview with him. We talked to him from the stage.
Right.
And he's an angry guy.
Yeah, but he uses that anger for specific things, uses it up, burns it through. I don't necessarily think it's healthy, but that's not my business. Live your life as you live your life.
Well, despite the fact that when I saw him performing, I mean, he performed in a pair of shorts.
Yeah.
That was his stage gear. And, you know, he's covered with tattoos and he's not super muscly, but he was super wiry. And, you know, because they were all starving to death because they were in a punk rock band, he was really, really taut. You know, he had lots of muscles, lots of muscle definition. And he looked scary on stage.
Yeah.
And he would take swings at people during that were bugging him in the audience and stuff like that. So,
well, he now talks about how he can't beat anybody up in a fight because he's an old man. And so he's got to be, yes, sir. No, that's a good idea, sir. Sorry to bother you, sir. And can back away from things now. So,
what I mean, is it an AB? I don't.
Well, he's in his early 50s. So, I know, but your bones can only take so much of this.
No, but I mean, is it really that much of an AB? Like, it's either punch someone or just fall completely under their thumb and
I'm sure he was joking to a degree.
Yeah.
I say listen to the episode, judge for yourself,
I will.
Read the Mojo interview Dave's talking about.
I do like him. There's an interview, I wish I could remember who posted it now, and I'm sorry that I can't, but someone posted an interview between Nardwar the Human Serviette and Henry Rollins, where Nardwar is showing him the picture of generic drivel on his chest.
Oh, neat.
And Rollins is able to recognize where the picture was taken, what year, based on the gear in the picture and what he's wearing and how long his hair is and stuff like that. So it's pretty good.
Well,
and
he's hyper focused. Yeah, he's a good sport. He's hyper focused. You listen to the interview and you go like, oh, this. I mean, I always worry though. I'm just like, well, this fuel burns you from the inside as well.
Anger is a good?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm saying he uses that fuel.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about competitiveness, I mean, on the whole, I would say I don't think competitiveness. Okay, here's the thing. I actually have a problem sometimes when people are saying, like, this is where this came from. Someone was talking about Wes Anderson movies and saying how, you know, the latest film of his is the best one. And it's like, what's the best Wes Anderson movie?
I don't mind that.
And to me, like, any Wes Anderson movie actually makes the other Wes Anderson movies better, because you become more used to Wes Anderson. If you watch the latest one and then watch a previous one, it makes it better and it raises it all. It's like if you watch the Empire Strikes Back makes Star Wars better. It makes that into a better movie. The Avengers makes the previous Marvel movies into better movies, because you watch them and you're reading more into it, gives you more context, and it lifts it all up.
Yeah.
So that's just in that kind of specific thing. I have a problem sometimes with, you know, what's the best? Well, something raises everything up and makes everything better.
Yeah.
Now, say you're the most basic competitive thing is a sports team. So say you're your high school sports team and you want to beat the other high school.
Go Huskies.
Right. Huskies versus the Marlins. So you want the game to be great and you want to win. But if you were the Huskies and you were dominating constantly dominating and just smearing the other team, your audience would probably get bored with that. They'd be like, "Oh, that's great."
No.
But let me say, if the matches were then more exciting, like if they were kind of close and then you won, then people would be more excited about the game. The games would be better. Your audience would grow.
Sorry, you were saying if it's a complete rote and no one's interested. Yeah.
So short term, you'd love to just smash them. But your better bet, if you want to get more audience and then, you know, more funding probably for your team, is the closer matches. So actually, you know, maybe even losing one or two and then having a comeback. So what seems like
sports,
is best for you.
Sports leagues are designed to create some level of, you know, equality is the wrong word, but some level of parity between teams.
Right.
So that hopefully no one team is so much better than the others that it just spends all year just wiping everyone else.
Right. But as the one team, you'd like to be that team that wipes the other one.
Well, as a fan, you'd love your team to be that one team.
Right.
That wipes
but what, so I'm saying is as a member of that team, what you actually desire probably isn't what's best for you. If you're, you know, you will try your best, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you actually lose a few, that probably is better for you in the long run, because you'll end up, if it's a professional league, make more money. If you're a school league, you'll build audience and they'll get more money, which will then get you better, whatever and whatever. When you look at like the Academy Awards, you know, you got the 10 films, they're all competing with each other. They are competing and someone's going to win and that's fine. But the better, if the movies are really good, that will hopefully raise people's tastes I don't want to say tolerance, but, you know, will just make things better for movies on the whole. People will go to more movies. That will make your next movie easier to sell and everything will get risen.
Well, so we've certainly seen movies improve in quality since the Academy Awards started.
Well, when did they start? In the 30s?
30s, yeah.
So you've seen movies improve since the 30s?
I don't think so.
You don't think movies have gotten any better since the 30s?
No. I think the best films from that time are as good as the best films of this time.
Okay.
I mean, they've made way more movies then.
Yeah.
But I think the best films from that period are as good as the best films of this time.
Okay. Well, that's so... I mean, it's so... The contexts are so radically different.
I don't mean Oscar winning or whatever. I mean, the Oscars started as a promotional thing. They were designed to promote movies.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't designed to actually recognize excellence. They were designed as a way to market films. So,
okay, but how about this? Now, instead of going, these are better, you know, don't high quality.
You were just doing that.
High quality. No, I'm not.
Yeah, you were. You were having trouble with the idea that films from the 1930s were as good as films from the
2015s. No, you said they were. You what did you say? As good or better?
As good as.
Oh boy, I don't even know about that. I dislike the idea. I dislike the idea that things haven't improved in an art form at all. It's like saying, I mean, you can always say that. You can go like, music in the 30s is better than music now. You know, paintings in the 30s were better than paintings now.
I'm not saying they're better. I'm saying that they're as good. I mean,
are as good. Music, yeah. Music has not improved.
No.
Since the, okay, and then you can go 100 years before then. Was music in the 1500s as good as it is now?
I'm not totally familiar with who would be your example.
I know
music.
It's tough. It's a hard. Tough one to do.
But would you say Beethoven is worse than the Beatles?
I think comparing is tough.
It's totally tough to compare, and I mean it's apples and oranges.
But that's what you
No, I'm just saying I'm not comparing. I'm just saying as good as.
That's comparing.
You know? Well, I mean it's sort of comparing, but I'm just saying that music was much harder. But I think with movies, what you don't think the movies that came out in the 30s are as good as films that come out now?
Well, like
in terms
of
entertainment?
As good as. I'd really need to break down the criteria you're talking about.
As entertaining as?
To who? To the people in the audience then? Or
to anyone who appreciates
films? To someone.
Films.
If I took a person off the street today.
No, because they're dummies.
You think people are dumber today than they were in the
30s? No, but the person off the street that you're talking about is a dummy.
The people off the street are who are going to movies. Who are these people going to movies in the 30s that are liking this that you're talking about?
They were okay with black and white films. Nowadays, people will get all upset if you try to show them a black and white movie.
Okay, let's go color. Let's go in the 40s when the color. So you're saying like if I took someone off the street.
Well, even then it was still mostly black and white films.
Okay, well, let's go color. When did color kick in? Late 40s?
I mean, there's still color films, but there was a special thing.
All right, well, you're saying color is the issue. If I take a person off the street and I show them a 1940s color movie, I take a person from today and I show them one then, they would enjoy it as much as a person back then would enjoy it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
They would enjoy it the same amount?
I think that it's as... I mean, if they're...
Then Turner Classic Movies must be doing amazingly well, right? I mean, because, like, why isn't everyone showing those movies then on TV, if that's
the most of
them
are black and white, and people are dumb.
Well, you're saying people are dumb! Now, are people dumber now than they were then?
No, I don't think people are dumb. I think they're dumb then, too. People are dumb.
All right, I disagree with that.
I mean, there's people in the 30s that wouldn't watch silent films because they didn't have sound to
them. There you go.
And they're like, I don't like those movies.
Some people
have no
hated TV because it wasn't as good as radio, because radio is the thing of the mind. Yeah. Why would you listen to radio when you can read a book? Why would you read a book when you can listen to Grandpa tell a story? Yeah. Why you listen to Grandpa tell a story when you can go out and you can kill this saber-toothed tiger that's attacking the family? Fucking yeah, you can play that for days.
So that's dumb.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, like, good quality movies help develop your taste for more good quality movies.
Okay.
So if that's a movie in the 30s, that's great. And it makes you enjoy a movie now more, that's great.
Yeah.
And I think it's the rising tide lifts all boats. The same thing with comics. You know, it's like you read a comic and it's really good. That makes you not want to just read more of that comic.
Yeah.
It makes you want to read more good comics.
Sure.
It raises your taste level up maybe a bit.
Sure.
So,
a little bit.
Yeah. So I mean, you can
you can say that, but you'll always slip back. You'll always backslide.
You want to have some McDonald's once in a while.
Yeah.
Okay. But like this was a discussion we had on a previous show with Branwyn Bigglestone, which she was talking.
Oh, her.
She's delightful. We got to have her back on the show sometime. Anyway, so she was talking about how, you know, Image Comics is in competition with other comics companies.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again,
that's true.
This is her. It is true. But I think
in terms of market,
in a direct market of like, there's only so many sales dollars currently.
Yeah.
For there isn't. Like in the retail industry, the retailers, the brick and mortar stores only have X amount of dollars to spend
on
product.
But so do the consumers.
Wait for it. So they've only got X amount of dollars to spend on product. Mm-hmm. They got to divide that up equally. But if a comic like a Saga comes along that starts selling way, way more, then that brings in new readers that had not previously been reading comics.
Okay.
You actually are swelling your market.
Yeah.
Now, when you add digital comics to that, now you've really got impulse readers who can just come immediately in and go, yeah, I'll take that. So you've got no set amount to spend. It's just the amount of people that decide to download. So I think the greater...
But they're still paying for the download.
They are paying for the download, but I'm saying there's not a set audience. There's not, you know, it's just 100,000 people reading comics and that's it. If you've got a product that people really like, you know, you expand that market. And then I think, like, if it then becomes 200,000 because they're reading, you know, whatever the hot book is, Walking Dead, you know, which is, that's about right for Walking Dead.
Sure.
Then the people that finish Walking Dead, who just downloaded it from their computer, well, there's other comics on there and maybe one of them will impulse buy another one. So you've now increased your market. And to me, that's the more important market to be chasing than the limited market. I mean, you've got to do both, obviously, but that's where you're going to make the greater profit in the long run, is increasing the amount of people actually consuming the medium as a whole.
Yeah.
So it's not a direct, oh, if there's only $2 on the table and they've either got to buy my thing or your thing. No, there could be other people coming in who buy
more. But
they're
still competing for that attention from the buyer.
Right. But there's
I mean, the set market is what I'm saying. If you have a person who reads Saga and then they go, well, I really like Saga. I'd like to read more comics. Then they decide they're going to read Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's good for Hawkeye and Saga, but it's not good for Image Comics necessarily because...
Why is that?
Because you want that person going, I really like Saga. Maybe I'll try Walking Dead or I'll...
Not necessarily. What I think is like, then you've got
Casanova,
that person...
Or
let's be honest. People read these on the toilet. So, okay. So you've written your Saga on your iPad.
I have never read...
Fair enough. You're a gentleman.
That's time for crossword puzzles.
David is like Kim Jong-un. He does not have a bum. So, does not poop. So you're reading your, saga or what have you. Mm-hmm. You finish your saga, you put it down, and now, like, the next time you go in there, you want to read something else, but you're not, you know, you're going to wait, like, a month or 2 months.
Yeah.
No, you want something else. What else is there? Hawkeye. That's great. Next day you come in, you want to read something else. What is there? It doesn't matter. Eventually you're going to grow the entire market, hopefully, with that kind of impulse.
All those
buy.
People reading on the toilet.
There's a lot of people reading on the toilet. Don't fool yourself.
No, I
That's don't. Why Angry I Birds don't. Is so popular.
Oh, that's not reading.
No, it isn't. But that's where people play Angry Birds. If you're, Dave, if you're ever playing Scrabble online with somebody, they're pooping.
Is that true?
Yeah. Because when else are you going to play
it? Don't do that.
That's fine.
I know I do poo. I'm not going to deny that.
Okay. Do you play Scrabble?
No, I do crossword puzzles while I'm going to the bathroom.
All I'm saying is if you play Scrabble online with someone, wash your hands afterwards.
That's the time for the New York Times crossword puzzle.
Oh, la di duba 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 duba.
I poo classy, sir. Classy.
Yes, I use the bathroom in pen.
No, I don't use pen. That's ridiculous.
A using fountain pen.
Using pen at all for a crossword puzzle
my
is
dad,
insane.
My dad used to, like, Sunday, fountain pen. Fountain pen. Just doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
do it.
And let me just say, maybe he was just making shit up. Mm. I don't know. As a kid, you just see it full and go, good for him. You know, you don't know. Yeah. Maybe he just fills in
if
the...
If it was one of those British acrostic ones, you have no idea. In fact, a British acrostic one, you can look at the answers in the back and still not understand.
Still no idea.
Where did this come from?
That's right.
It's insane. But so let's backtrack quite a bit here, because you went off on your comic book rant there.
Well, we're back.
So speaking
no
of...
No news is good news.
Speaking of competition as a way of firing your... I think, because we were talking about the fact that praise isn't kind of an empty... It's a, you know, it does fuel you a little bit, but it's kind of empty in the sense that it's like sugar.
It depends where you put it, yeah.
It's like, you know, you drank a Coke and now you're running around the room.
What are you saying? We're both drinking Cokes right now.
Yeah, yeah. And we're both running around the room.
Okay.
Aioli.
Are you thinking about garlic
thinking
mayonnaise?
Of, yeah.
Oh, I could go for a little of that on a roast beef sandwich.
That would
be
good.
Nice.
Yeah. I like that. And, but I think that competition is the same in the sense that it's not a real fuel, you know, because what happens when you, I mean, who are you competing against? You know what I mean? And what happens if they suddenly outpace you in some way? And that, you know, are you demoralized? Do you stop what you're doing? Or do you, does that fire you even more? Or, you know what I mean? Like if you're ranking yourself against other people,
yeah,
rather than just being inspired and loving what they're doing, that's a really tricky place
to put
yourself.
Well, this was a debate I had with my dad. And by debate, I mean he just told me how he felt, and that was the end of it.
Sounds like you're in competition with someone.
Well, he said that life was a competition.
Okay.
And don't fool yourself. It's a competition. And to him, with his business and whatever, it was a competition.
No.
And I my feeling, which I did not say to him because that would have not gone over well at the time, was then like, well, then what happens if you win? How do you know?
Yeah, but you don't win.
You don't win.
That's the nature of that competition.
If you make it a competition, now you have just made yourself lose.
Yeah.
You know,
you cannot win that.
If there has to be a win or lose, and there is no end to this.
No.
So it's just, you know, it's the gradual, you know, beating the little demon in your head that says you can't do it.
Well, that kind of attitude, I mean, you create your idea of what your success is that you're trying to compete for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a self-defined competition. Like you might be competing against someone who has no idea what that they're even in a competition or what the goal of it is, you know, and their idea of whatever they're doing with, say, if you are in business, and their idea of business is as a cooperative, you know, thing that works together and as a team, it achieves goals, you know, whether it's sales or whatever. And then you come in there and you're this person who's competing against the people within the company itself.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, it'd be so disruptive. I mean, how is that? How's that winning?
Yeah,
you become this disruptive person with this crazy goal that no one else knows about, and you're like, I'm winning, you know, like.
Yeah, and there are people that are like that.
I guess that's
you
true.
You know, absolutely, there's people that like that. It's like when I was when I used to, you know, do more acting.
Yeah.
I get called by my agent, and it'd be like, you're going out 10 a.m. to this audition. You go into the audition room. You get your sides.
Yeah.
You know, your script, and then you go in and you sit in a room.
I thought you meant fries.
Yeah, you get a big thing of fries. You eat your fries, grease up your face to get it moist, because the camera reads that book. No.
That's right.
So so you go in and you sit in a room with a bunch of people that look like you.
Yeah.
Look like you and are dressed like you because you've been told how to dress.
Okay.
And then you go in and it's only going to be one of you and you're sitting there with 20 other guys that look just like you.
Yeah.
And that really feels like, well, this is clearly the competition. But, you know, even that wasn't. Because these people cast a lot of stuff, so yeah. You go in, and if you're not right for this, there's a longer run always, and they might see you and think, oh no, we want you for this instead.
Yeah.
Or if nothing else, you've just had an experience auditioning, so you know how to audition better.
Yeah.
It's more practice. You know, you can think of it that way, or you can think of, I didn't get it, and I suck. You know, take it however you want.
I'm in a lower rank than these other people.
But it seems like an obvious, I mean, as much as the two sports teams competing, well, that's a clear black and white. It's not. There's a gray, because like the bigger picture is always there, and the same thing with like acting. Then when I got into doing improv, I do competitive improv, you know, for many, many years, but the competition is fake. It should be fake.
Yeah.
As in like, you know, you care, but you shouldn't care.
Yeah.
You know, you care about the scenes you're doing, but who cares about the score at the end? Because you don't win any money or anything.
Yeah, it would be so funny if someone like got so mad.
They did constantly. There was punches thrown, man.
Really?
Absolutely. There was punches thrown when I first started. And then they made the mistake of once a year, there'd be a competition called the Massacre, St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Okay, you know, I remember
and
this.
Now it's just called the Massacre.
Yeah.
Where there'd be an actual prize, like the team that won would go to Vegas or get actually some money or something.
Wow.
And then shit met fan because people actually really did try to win.
Yeah.
And then if you see an improv show where people are actually trying to sabotage the other team, it's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, it isn't so much fun.
No, one of the things that bugs me to this day is, you know, there's a list, you know, one of the credits that they've got on this company that I used to work for is like, you know, world champion improvisers, da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, but it doesn't matter, man, like at all. That's bullshit. It's just, you might as well say like you won like a wrestling thing. You can, but it's, you know, it's bullshit, right?
Yeah.
It's just make-em-ups. You know, in fact, if you go by the rules of improv, if you win, you should have lost because you didn't make the other team look good. So, you know, you were trying too hard. So, boo, you lose the Zen game of improv, dummy.
What makes me angry
What makes me angry when I'm your clams?
When I'm competing, isn't losing. It's if I'm doing badly.
Uh-huh.
I get mad at myself.
Mad or embarrassed?
Mad. Yeah, I'm mad at myself.
What would be a circumstance where this would happen?
Just if I feel like, say, every weekend I play volleyball every Sunday night.
All right, sounds made up. What is that?
Volleyball? It's a volleyball.
You go to Wally, Wally Exchange.
That's right. It's volleyball
played
in a racquetball court.
Crazy.
No, it's a lot of fun, actually.
Okay, good.
It is an actual thing because you buy kits for it, and so you can stretch the net across the racquetball court.
Okay. By the way, in Vancouver, Kits and Wally are as far apart as you possibly could get culturally.
That's true.
All right.
That's true.
So the idea of a Wally Kit is just crazy. Anyway.
Only here, though.
Inside jokes for the regional district. Enjoy them
we're losing.
Okay, go ahead.
When I'm playing that, like if I'm – like actually the other Sunday, this past Sunday I played. We had – like I was, you know, I was having fun, but I felt like I wasn't at my best. There's a lot of balls that went the wrong way, like off my hand. Instead of, you know, going forward, it went backwards. And I just didn't feel it. I didn't feel like I was all there
out of the groove.
And I was still coming out of this flu that I had. And so I think I was a little behind. And usually I play a pretty good game. And so I felt kind of blah. And I was really mad at myself. You know, it might look like I'm mad because we're losing, but I'm not. I'm just super mad because I'm playing so badly, you know, and it's just so frustrating. The other thing I get mad about is if I get called as a cheater when I don't think I'm cheating.
Oh,
one of the things that in volleyball or in volleyball, where your hand goes over the net is important. Like you're not supposed to like go to the other side.
Right.
I'm pretty tall, so I can jump quite high and get my hand over the net. And so over time of playing, it became pretty common for guys to like reach over and knock the ball out of someone's hand. It's not strictly legal, but it just kind of grew the game that way. But recently we had a new guy join the group who's a real Mr. Rules.
Mm.
And he's all like, you know, double hit, whatever. You're like, well, just bounce off my face, which was fine before. Like if you hit the ball, hit your face, whatever. But now it's double hit, you know, you lose a turn. And if I put my arm over the thing, he's like, you know, you can't put your arm over the net like that, you know. And I just get so mad, you know, I'm like so mad that I get called out on this. Because, you know, we did it all the time before. So why am I getting? So it just drives me crazy. So then I'll have like a temper tantrum. I'll smash the ball, lose my turn, or just knock the ball out of play or whatever, you know, because I'm so mad. I just can't keep it in. Such a big baby.
Let me ask you, let's psychoanalyze. Psychoanalyze. Were you accused when you were young of cheating at any time incorrectly?
No.
Is this a new feeling then for you?
No, just a sense of, I think I have a deep sense of self-righteousness that's very easily offended.
Yeah, someone says you're this and it's like, I'm clearly not that.
Yeah. And so like it does upset me. And I think also I was terrible at sports when I was a kid. Mm. Absolutely terrible. Because I grew really fast, and so I outgrew my muscles.
Yeah.
And so I was this gangly giraffe trying to play with little, what would be something that would be agile, little monkeys, you know, they're running all over.
Ooh, giraffe versus monkeys would be a good game.
And there you go. And I'm this thing kind of, you know, my legs flailing and me running around falling over and, you know, and it just, I was always picked last for every sports thing that we ever did at elementary school. And because I like sports, it really hurt my feelings that I was picked last. And I never understood why.
Right.
Because I would be like, well, it's just me and this guy, like, you know, the guy on crutches. So for sure I'm him? Not what? How bad can I be? So it really bugged me. It wasn't until I was a teenager that I actually got pretty good at sports. And I would, you know, because I kind of grew into myself.
Yeah.
And so I think I still have that. I think I still have that kind of bad self-image or whatever.
Do they still do that, by the way, the picking like that?
Mm-hmm.
Do they?
Yep.
How about we just...
They do that for the All-Star game for the NHL. They choose...
Wow. Okay, I don't mind for All-Star.
And there's one guy picked last.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously it has to be that way.
Yeah.
They give him a car, the last person chosen last. It gets a car.
Okay.
It's kind of a consolation prize,
I always thought, like, well, just like have a bag.
Yeah.
And you reach in, you each get chips, and then that's the team you're on.
No, I mean, because think when when we played street hockey and stuff like that, you choose up sides. And the way, it's fair in a way,
no, because I got it, but...
you don't want people, because what's going to happen is the best guys are all going to team together and totally destroy the other
Not
guys.
If it's random. Not if it's a random choice.
Well, if it's random, but I mean, but it is kind of random
then
when you can
God's
choose.
God's will.
You know, you pick captains and then they choose
who
they want. And obviously there's a diminishing quality of player as you go down. And then you get to me. I guess I was in the negatives. So I think I have a bad, like, I just feel like probably I have that going against me as well.
Yeah, you know, it'd be an extra dick move, but it would be kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You do it like this. You do like, all right, so it's you're picking teams, right?
Yeah.
So you get the captains.
Yeah.
But what you got to do is you pick the players for the other team.
Yeah.
So you're reverse picking. So you're going that way, and it's like, you know.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
But I mean, even then, you still would know why you were picked first.
It's a bit of a dick move, but still, yeah. At least you're not waiting for the thing.
The
person who's waiting at the end knows I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
It's like a beauty pageant now, and it's not like, you know, an ugly pageant.
Yeah.
Ugh, ugly pageants. Why do they even have those? They don't. Okay. Good to know.
Good. It'd be terrible. Although, reminds me of that movie Dogfight.
Explain.
The one with River Phoenix and Lily Taylor, I think her name is.
I do not know this movie.
You don't know the movie where he's a Marine who's on leave, and they have a contest in these guys that he's all the other jarheads or whatever,
yeah.
You know, these other army guys. They have a contest they have to find the ugliest girl.
Yeah.
And then they have to bring her back to
people
this.
People used to do that, yeah.
To this bar, this agreed upon meeting place, and then whoever has got the ugliest girl wins the contest, wins
right,
the dogfight.
Right.
It's a good movie, though.
Right.
I got to tell you.
It's
a really
good
film.
I always want to see something like that then.
You've never seen it?
No.
I highly recommend it.
I will take a look. That the girls then murder all the guys.
That would be good.
That'd be good.
That'd be good.
By the way, that's very close to Dinner for Schmucks. That's kind of the plot of Dinner for Schmucks.
Don't like it.
What do you not like?
Well, I
don't know. Like the word schmuck?
No, I don't like the idea of that. But I mean, the movie Dogfight really,
okay.
It's a very... touching film. I mean, it goes in ways you would expect, but it's a good film.
All right. I will check that out.
And I've kind of given it away because what's actually happening, I don't think you know, so I kind of wrecked that part of it. Sorry, everybody.
But it's also like Dogfight plus Dogfight.
Yeah, plus it's
a clever name, right?
It's a 20-year-old film.
All right.
So.
I will see if it's on. I will see if I can legally download it. Let's go with that.
Yes. I don't know. I don't know if it's on Netflix.
It might be on the PlayStation Network. Let me tell you something. The PlayStation Download Network.
Tell me about the PlayStation Download
Network.
Pretty
good. You know, if you're looking like trying to find a copy of like an HD copy of Tron, where can I find that?
About,
nowhere. Boom. There it is.
What about The Interview? Have you enjoyed that on the PlayStation? That's a Sony film, so I'm sure you enjoyed The Interview on that. Because it's on Netflix, obviously. So it's going to be on the Sony PlayStation.
That thing is like now everywhere.
Yeah.
That thing is just being delivered to your home now.
Well, actually, Seth Rogen and James Franco came to our house and performed it for us.
That's possible.
Well, Millis played the role of Kim Jong Young Jim King?
Some young Kim Jong.
Mighty Joe Young.
Was it Young Mighty, King Jim?
Played Mighty Joe Young.
Yum Yum?
That's it. That was
all right. Very good. Sure.
Yum Yum.
Yeah.
That's right. We did the that movie. I mean, that the Mikado.
Nice one. Nice pull. I was going, can he get it? Can he get it to the Mikado? He got to the Mikado. Very nice. All right.
I have Gilbert and Sullivan in my record collection.
There you are. Now, Dave.
Yes.
Is there anything else before we wrap up this episode?
I think you have something to promote, a little show that you're doing.
Oh, sure, sure. James Bond Live. James Bond has become public domain in Canada, so we are doing a James Bond comedy show.
Yes.
I know I shouldn't say comedy, but it is, at the Rio Theater, and that is going to be February 5th.
So when
doors
I go
at
there,
7.
When we go there, which
8
I
o'clock
will,
is when the show starts.
When we go there, which we will, we can expect to laugh.
You can.
Okay.
And I think it's possible. Like, it's a 19 plus.
Yes.
Though some shows, let me just say this, at the Rio, I found this out.
Yes.
You can send the kids to the balcony.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing.
They that's can, nice.
That is a nice little option they got there. Rio, it's also now got all the lights in the sign. They got like a new sign. It's
yeah?
full of lights.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I'll have to drive by.
Nice and bright. So you'll be able to see it from miles around.
That's right. Yeah. It's now one of the main light polluters in Vancouver.
Sure is.
You cannot see any stars above it.
Oh, it's fucking up owls. Let me tell you that much. Owls are just crashing right into your windows as you drive your car. Yeah. Really confused.
Poor owls.
Yeah, poor owls.
Yeah.
You know what they miss? They miss that Owl Prowl show.
They do miss it as well. That's right.
Yeah.
The Owl Prowl. What a name for a show that was on at 10. So late.
That was
how
late back then.
I know. How could we stay up so late? I would, my mom and dad gave me an alarm clock that would turn off. I could set it so that it would turn off so I could listen to network replay. And if I fell asleep while listening to it, it would turn off the radio.
I used to have to wake up at like 2 a.m. to listen to certain radio shows and listen to them and then go right back to sleep. It was almost like my horrible coughing jags.
Only radio.
Yeah, there you are. Okay. So, Dave, you wrap this one up.
Do I have to? Okay, everybody. Oh, I just want to say one last thing before I wrap up.
Okay. Say one thing before he says the last thing,
okay.
Which is, again, we love hearing from you. SneakyDragon.com is our website. We're on Facebook. Sneaky_Dragon is on Twitter. No one ever writes us on that, though. That's impossible.
Wait,
no.
We get some little comments.
And email is sneakyd@sneakydragon.com.
That is true.
All right. Now back to David with your evening wrap-up.
Everybody, don't forget that you can go to the website and buy t-shirts. And I just want to say one thing about shirts, which is that...
Everyone loves them.
I just want to explain that it sometimes takes a while for us to get the shirt to you because I'm only in town once a week. And so...
Legally, Dave's only allowed,
I'm only allowed
to be
in town.
He did something, let's just say, in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say involved Anne Murray.
Let's just say...
He is not legally allowed into town
let's just say,
more than once a week.
Let's just say I Mr. Magooed it. And so I can only come in town once a week. So it kind of stretches out how long it takes us to get the shirt sometimes because when you order and then it falls... And I have to order them and it takes them a while to print them and everything else. So I'm sorry if sometimes there's a lag between when you order and when you get your shirt. Someone is expecting a shirt. It's in the mail tomorrow, so hopefully you'll get
it
soon.
We have it.
Ian's wiggling it. So other than my...
Dave has not spilled a Coke on it.
For a change, everybody. Good things come in threes. Also bad things, apparently. Me spilling things.
Mm-hmm.
Three times a charm. Thank you for listening to Sneaky Dragon, everyone. We really appreciate you listening to the show and writing to us and enjoying it. And we really enjoy your comments and your participation. So thanks, everybody. We'll see you again next week.
And no news is good news.
Okay. Give me
a beat.
That's right. My name's Dave, and I'm here to say...
A lot of people were here to say in the 80s.